The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger. It's glad to be here.
Oh, I'm sure you are. I'm looking forward to this conversation. And my other guest, we got the tag team today. We got Mr. Bill Gormley. Bill is the president of the Gormley Group, and he is also the chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger.
This is a show we try to do every year, a little year in review for 2014, this year. And so we'll get right into that. But first, you know, just in recent days, we've seen Administrator Dan Tangerlini at GSA has resigned. I think it's effective. He's leaving on February 13th, if I remember correctly. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on his stewardship and also, you know, what's the impact on GSA with his leaving. So, Carolyn, I'll let you go first.
Okay. Well, I think that during Dan's tenure, we've seen a lot of focus on strategic sourcing and deep analysis on the impact of GSA programs on the ability of government to buy, particularly at low prices. Dan has indicated in his departure announcement that his deputy will be acting as he leaves. So I expect that we're going to see his policies continue.
Right. And Bill, do you have any thoughts?
Well, in addition to the areas Carolyn touched, I think Dan is a big advocate of telework, and as a small business, I understand the value of trying to save costs and so forth. But I think there's also a value of a culture, and I think GSA has let so many people telework. I mean, it's a good thing, but I think that, you know, it's going to come a point in time that I think attention is going to have to be given to telework and bringing people together and. I think we'll be able to get into some of the examples later on through this through today's show, Roger.
Okay. Well, with that, I think let's move on to 2014 and the year in review. And I think the first topic, we're just going to go topic by topic here, and primarily we'll focus on GSA for a lot of this, but there are cross-cutting issues government wide. You know, so first, just I wanted to talk about strategic sourcing. You know, what did we see in 2014? Where are the trends going? And what do you see for 2015, I guess? So first, then Bill?
Well, I think strategic sourcing, I know you've had that topic on the show quite a few times for those avid listeners, followers.
Yes,
yes. Right, there you go. So, but I think at the end of the day, I think the strategic sourcing is a good direction for any organization, you know, to go and to use. I think the way it's being handled in government is if you look at it as one government, is the largest organization in the world. And I think you get to kind of span of control, or you get into size areas that it just does not fulfill its intended objective, and then therefore creates unintended consequences. So I think here, I'm very much an advocate of the agencies and departments doing it at their level. And as you know, Roger, a big advocate of the BPA side that allows agencies to keep, market quality, market products, technology, and also market pricing. So I think the government has tried to squeeze so much out of this that if the government actually rolled up its total cost of strategic sourcing, that I don't think the savings really reflect, I think, what's being reported out there.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, Carolyn, actually, one of the key issues about recording savings is the data I've seen, it's really just based on a discount off GSA schedule pricing, and I don't think that's a very accurate measure. What do you think?
Well, it's not an accurate measure because you can also get those same discounts by using the schedules program directly. And I think that GSA did not see agencies adopt strategic sourcing to the extent that they had initially expected. But for that reason, I think you're seeing the concept of strategic sourcing maturing beyond its original concept, because it was very much focused on the acquisition process. And in some of the strategic sourcings that were initiated during the past year, the concept went from acquisition to how agencies use, how demand management and how agencies utilize their products instead of just based on the price. So the concepts went to best practice, for example, in the furniture strategic sourcing and in the IT strategic sourcing concept. And now they're moving beyond that to category management. So in some ways, the concept is getting more realistic than it was initially.
So at the same time, last year we saw, I believe, the award of the IDIQ contracts for office supplies, mm-hmm. establishment of those contracts, again, this umbrella contract, which, from, a company's perspective, the ones we talk to, their frustration is it duplicated the GSA schedules program, something that already had IDIQ contracts in place. Do you think there's going to be this sort of bifurcated, it seems to me a bifurcated sort of strategy. I mean, they look at things like office supplies as a true commodity that they can, smush it all together into one requirement and put a contract out there and try to drive people to use it versus, you talk about best practices and things that are more, for lack of a better term, customer design, whether it's a furniture solution or an IT solution.
Well, I think there are distinctly different solutions that are applicable for something that is a true commodity and then for items that are have much more customization in their use. The difference between an office supply and a piece of furniture, for example. And I think that the strategies are going to have to be different for those types of items. I think that the strategies are going to have to be different as you start to incorporate more service levels into the types of items that the government buys. And just basically, no matter what area that you look in now in federal acquisition, there are already many, many variations of acquisition vehicles. And so I would like to see the government move away from establishing more acquisition vehicles to a concept of instructing agencies how to use the vehicles that they have.
Well, it leads to another question. Have we seen any progress this past year? Did we see any progress in addressing contract duplication?
Yeah, we saw a lot of progress. There's more contract duplications. I don't know if it's progress or not. So I think part of that we hear like strategic sourcing, we hear limited resources internally, government budgets are constrained. It's hard to hire people, long hiring process. Yet the government finds a way to increase the number of duplicative contracts dealing in, and not only duplicative contracts, but contracts dealing with, we're dealing with the same industry. So it's not as though there's two categories of industry here. So companies have to bid. So people are like, well, if you're not interested, if it costs you too much, don't bid. You can't. Yeah, that's a throwaway kind of a way to handle this. We have yet to see, as far as I know, we've yet to see OFPP turn down a request for a program, for someone to stand up a program for a GWAC. And I think if the budget's really that tight and resources are that valuable and limited, you would think that OFPP could, and I know there's a new OFPP administrator, Ann Rung, and we'll probably touch on that during the show here. I mean, this is a great opportunity for OFPP to demonstrate some leadership here and at least start to address where they have an actual opportunity to exercise their authority through their reviews to limit the number of these independent programs that are literally identical. And I think when we're trying to, you know, we talk about LPTA, we'll talk about, Carolyn's talked about pricing and what are other objectives. You know, we would think that the government would look at how do they just save you know, their resources, meaning the people time as well as the pricing side. It all adds up to be taxpayer money. So contract duplication is costing the taxpayer, you know, a lot of unnecessary tax dollars to be spent here. And I think I'll leave it at that right now.
Right. We just have to take a break. Well, you were referring to, right, the business case analysis requirement for major IDIQ contracts agency-wide, that there's that review process, and we haven't seen publicly, at least, any contracts turned down from that.
Exactly.
Right. So we do have to take our first break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Carolyn Austin. She is Executive Vice President, General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group and Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Carolyn Austin, Executive Vice President, General Counsel, Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill Gormley, who is President of Gormley Group, Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And guys, when we took a break, we were talking about contract duplication. And I know, Carolyn, you had a couple other thoughts.
Yeah, I think contract duplication is a significant issue. It's a huge one for small businesses that have even less resources for responding to government requirements than large businesses. The one area where I think that there has been improvement in contract duplication is at least a recognition by the government that it is a significant issue. Ann Rung issued a memo at the, who's administrator of OFPP, issued a memo at the end of 2014. And one of the issues she's addressed was contract duplication. And I think OFPP has kind of a blueprint for dealing with it in several manners. One is to review the procedure that Bill was just talking about on business case analysis of new IDIQ contracts.
So, Carolyn, where you said that contract duplication creates a hardship on small business?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to understand what that means. I guess I'll just put this out there for all of us. Does contract duplication reduce competition? I would say it does.
And why would you say it does, Bill?
I would say because you pretty much are constraining industry from competing, you know, in a limited area. So if they don't get the award under contract duplication, then they're out. Where on a broader scale, I think you have a greater opportunity for market pricing. So I think you raised it. Excellent point on the financial and the hardship or the negative impact on small business, on the small business community. And therefore, I think I have a good position saying that it limits competition.
Right. It's a stovepiping effect, right? Sort of like if you stovepipe things and you don't get on a contract, you have a limited number, or if you have a limited number of sources, whereas if you were, you know, sort of had the opportunity to meet requirements through a broader based contract vehicle like an ITGWAC or GSA schedules, you know, that the schedules in particular provide opportunity for companies to get on those contracts every business day of the year.
Yeah, so, and from that point, I certainly agree. It spreads resources way too thin for all businesses, in particular small ones. So there may be that one procurement where their resources or their abilities are very much needed that they can't respond to because they just run out of resources.
Right. And Carolyn, to your point about recognition of the problem, at the same time, I think it's very frustrating out there for industry in particular, because at the same time you have leadership recognizing the problem. Anecdotally, you can talk to people in the community and it's worse than it's ever been in terms of the number of contracts they have to compete for and try to get on for fear of being shut out of a particular market, to Bill's competition question.
Right.
So, next subject I wanted to turn to is, I think, a related and it may be a way to address contract duplication in part, is category management. There's a lot of, you know, talk about what it is. There's a GSA level. There's a government-wide level. You know, Carolyn, do you want to take a shot of this first?
Yeah, well, I think category management is, from the government's perspective, a way of managing common use items. It's a way of trying to leverage their internal expertise so that particular agencies will be assigned responsibility to work on different commodity types and to share best practices with other agencies that are looking to make similar buys.
So how does it work if, let's say, for example, the Department of Defense is the category manager for transportation? Is the department really going to want to share best practices and look out for the civilian side of government? It seems to me, you know, I'm kind of a skeptic. It seems to me that, you know, I want, as a taxpayer and a citizen, I want DOD to focus on its core mission, rather than trying to, you know, manage government-wide sort of policies and practices for transportation. And even, do they even have the statutory authority to do it? I mean, put my lawyer's hat for a second.
Well, you know, some of these things, the lawyers have not put their hats on, and neither have the people who have to implement the concepts. And like everything from a high level, it sounds perfectly reasonable. The devil is always in the details, and particularly in selecting the agencies that are going to lead these various initiatives. I mean, you raise a good point about DOD and whether or not it has visibility to all the civilian agency needs and what their priorities are going to be, because you would think rightfully their priority is going to be the Department of Defense and not maybe how a small agency ultimately gets its packages delivered.
Well, Bill, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the vision or the objective has been fairly well explained by GSA in this case. And, you know, Carolyn, I don't want to duplicate what Carolyn said, contract duplication. So so I think it's really going to be in how's it going to be carried out. You know, there's got to be a leadership in each side, and government does work well in certain areas within government. But I think once you get into the acquisition world and logistics world and the policy world, I'm usually half glass half full, and I'm not seeing it yet. So I'm trying to be fair to GSA and the members associated with this in government. I think something's supposed to come out, if I'm not mistaken, April or something like that, is what I understand, the first sign of seeing something real on category management. So I'll kind of reserve any comment until we give birth on this and see if we recognize it.
Yeah, well, you know, and the concept of category management is actually growing past GSA. GSA started it, and now with the, back to the Ann Rung memo again, it's the five agencies that are going to be involved are GSA plus, as Roger mentioned, DOD, and I think it's OPM maybe for human resources.
Training,
I think medical supplies and services is going to be another category, but as far as I know, there's been no category manager named yet
VA,
for that one.
VA didn't step up?
I don't know who stepped up, but
great,
there hasn't been an announcement.
Yeah, right.
Right. It's well, do you have any, you know, thoughts? Is it too early to tell, or do you have any thoughts on what the impact may be on contractors? I mean, it really is an interesting, in a government context, concept, because you're talking about having, quote, the overall sort of management or best practice, whatever you're calling it, category manager at one agency, but they're not doing all the procurements. At least that's the way it's been explained. They will help or facilitate, you know, I guess, working together across, you know, government, kumbaya, right, kind of thing. But it just seems to me there's so many moving parts there. And getting back to the issue of, it ultimately gets back to agency-specific requirements and how you meet those. I'm just...
Yeah, I think just... for the sake of our listeners that are driving or at work right now, I think it's just like we got to let this thing.
Got to move on to another category.
We're not ready to get an HOV lane yet. Right. We got to park it and see what it looks like when it comes out.
Okay. Well, related to that as well, though, is Common Acquisition Portal, which is, I guess, GSA's new electronic corridor. You know, what is the intent of that, and what will be the impact, do you think, on GSA, but also the contractors and customer agencies?
I think as I've heard it expressed a couple times from GSA, you know, they're looking for other agencies to get in line here and to host their contracts as well. So it'll be how well everybody's going to play in the sandbox here. So I think that is going to be kind of the same. Some of the same unknowns with category management is going to be disclosed in this initiative as well. Hey, these are good initiatives. Let's not just take, you know, let's kind of not go half empty here or half, you know, half full type thing. But I think some of these are really have to get put into motion in order to really kind of see where's there. It's fun and it's easy to talk around the table and the management, you know, who's going to do what, and hey, well, you know, we'll raise our hand, we'll help out. But, you know, when everybody leaves the table is when the world gets real. And I think that's what we're going to have to wait and see, you know, where there's who's going to commit the resources, because this is a full-time job. It's just not a matter of having interest. You know, once you take on this role of a manager or you know, be part of this electronic corridor that GSA wants to put together of contracts, you know, there's got to be a lot of interaction in people to manage it. So it's going to be interesting how that's.
So you're talking about cultural change too, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, well, Carolyn, I'm sorry, but we do have to take our next break. When we come back, I'll hold that thought, Carolyn, and we'll come right back to you. My guests today are Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President, General Counsel, Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Alston. She is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill Gormley, who is President of Gormley Group and Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And guys, we were talking Common Acquisition Portal when we took our last break, and I think, Carolyn, you had another thought you wanted to throw in there.
I was just going to observe that the Common Acquisition Portal and category management are tied together as a concept. It's like the Common Acquisition Portal provides IT infrastructure for category management. So to the extent that we talk about what's going to happen with the Common Acquisition Portal, you would hope to see the concept of category management develop more completely so that it is not the IT that's driving the policy, but the policy that drives the IT.
That would be a good thing, I think.
That sounds practical.
Right. So
common sense in federal procurement.
Let's keep going down the checklist here. And I know some terminology being thrown out there, last year, and it will be in this year as well, as schedules modernization. And Carolyn, what is that?
Well, I think modernization is in the eye of the beholder. The coalition had hoped for a concept of modernization that included a revision to its pricing policy. We did, and I think this last year, provide GSA a white paper on changes that we would like to see in the MAS pricing policy.
We also provided an innovation white paper just sort of how to transform, or at least put together a process for transforming IT Schedule 70, right to the innovation schedule.
Yes, and I think the underlying concept of our recommendations was to leverage competition that's already occurring at the task order level in order to reduce some of the burden of making the initial contract. GSA, on the other hand, in their modernization efforts, have focused on horizontal pricing at the contract level, which basically means that not only is the agency looking at how potential contractors sell in the commercial market, but then they want to compare the prices of one contractor to another. That's very difficult where there is really no specific description of what the government is buying. But GSA has developed several tools that they are using to make this comparison. Again, this goes back to some of our original observations. The focus is on price.
Right. And Bill, I know you have some thoughts about price. Is that LPTA?
Killing it.
Yeah, is that LPTA?
Yeah. Well, also, you know, I'm listening to Carolyn, and you know, we're all, you know, we're you know, in the eye of the storm here. So, you know, the things that we see get swirl around us occasionally, we get glimpses of. But, you know, Carolyn's talking about horizontal pricing. You know, there's this amount of, again, effort, you know, put it around this identification of the $29 stapler, and how do we not buy that in government? Well, I mean, I think we're focused on some things that are just, you know, literally spending taxpayer dollars to save pennies, and we want to save both, right?
Right.
And I think a good way to do that is just allow the competition in the market to have maximum competition in the market, and it's the things we're talking about here is creating duplication, and then by introducing duplication to anything is costly, and that's where it's, I think, from an industry standpoint, and it should be from a government, it's frustrating that either the contracting officers have to go through more hurdles to make a decision. There's more layers of requirements put on them. If we get a chance, I don't know, but Roger, you think we'll have time to talk about thoughts moving forward or something?
Oh, yes, we'll definitely do that, Bill.
All right. I'll refrain from a point.
Okay, let's save that for the last segment, okay?
Right, but I think it's important that the government just can't focus on price. And I think they focused on it long enough that probably the results they're seeing are results that would probably hopefully move away from just LPTA and get into the basic foundation of the FAR, which is determination of fair and reasonable pricing.
Right. Well, you know, along those lines, I did want to ask too about the role of data in, you know, this quote schedules modernization, or even the idea of how you compare prices. Because what, you know, the question is, are you looking at comparable terms and conditions? I think to your point, they're trying to compare pricing of one type of situation, like a contract that's open-ended, that only has a guaranteed minimum of $2,500 and the opportunity to compete, versus competition for an agency-specific requirement. Those are two vastly different things. But also the data reporting seems to be a big part of all these things, whether it's category management, strategic sourcing, common acquisition portal, and schedules modernization. You know, thoughts on that, Carolyn?
Yeah, the data reporting is something that our members talk to us about a lot because, for two reasons. One is that it's very costly to establish new data reporting requirements internally for these companies. But secondly, the question is what happens to the data once it's reported and whether or not that data is actually useful for making the comparisons that the government is making. One of the big differences is in just what you raised, Roger, a lot of the data that's reported is on individual transactions, but it's being used to negotiate at the contract level where there's no specific information about what the requirement is, the quantity of the requirement, the terms and conditions of the requirement. So it's going to take quite a balancing act to be able to narrow down the data elements to the ones that are going to be useful to the government in making the comparisons. And right now, sometimes it seems like it's a blanket. You know, we ask for a lot of stuff, and then we may use a few of these data elements.
Yeah, it's just an interesting dynamic in the market. It almost reminds me of going back to the old rules, where if you gave the government a lower price on the contract, that became the price on the contract, period. And you know, we all know what that experience was, that prices became static, competition was lessened at the order level, and customers complained about even more than they do now about GSA schedule pricing. and contractors complained because they couldn't offer a lower price because of the risk, the, you know, the business proposition didn't make sense on a global basis, where it makes sense for a specific set of requirements at an agency level.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that, and we may talk about this in the next segment on moving forward, but that GSA is doing is they have a white space study that's being conducted by, I believe, by MITRE Corporation. And it is looking at what, how the government would buy if there were no schedules in place. If they were starting from a new starting point, what would the program look like? And it, part of it is a survey to suppliers on their pain points and the value of the program. And I believe they're doing the same thing also for customers. So it's going to be interesting to see
how those two things marry out. Are they consistent? Right now we do have to take our last break. But as promised, Bill, when we come back, we'll talk about thoughts moving forward.
Don't change the channel.
We'll not. or spin that dial
that's
or
right,
whatnot.
Spin that
or
dial.
What that.
That's right.
So you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President, Coalition for Government Procurement, and Bill Gormley, who is President of Gormley Group and Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Bill, as promised, we are going to look at thoughts moving forward, what to expect in 2015 and beyond. And I know you're all fired up for this segment.
I'm so ready to go.
And hopefully nobody's, you know, turned that dial or pressed that button or whatever they do now in your digital cars.
Yeah,
so, so Bill, go ahead.
Okay. Well, the easy one to take off the table, thoughts moving forward, is for GSA to have fewer contracts this year than last year. So I'm just putting that out there. Okay. The next one is, I think GSA, you know, Carolyn, you talked about schedules modernization. So hopefully through the current review, GSA will see a phenomenal opportunity here to convert the schedules program over to an evergreen program, and therefore would allow contracts to be reviewed but have no end dates, no official end dates, and that would have a significant positive impact on their customer base as well as the industry base. And I would say would create further competition and have a higher level of customer satisfaction because of there's no end dates on this. And the other thing, you ready for this one?
Sure, I'm ready. We're ready.
You know, we talk about acquisition and reinvention and all that. I think, we've seen some interesting policy come out lately. So I think moving forward, I think I'd actually put a stake in the ground on this. I'd say there's a critical gap in industry between policy writers and operational implementation people.
So you mean in government?
In government.
Right.
Yep. And I think the people who are writing acquisition policy, sure, they're very thoughtful and so forth, but I really don't, you know, based on some of the things that we've seen over the past year or so, I think there's a significant opportunity to, I always am showing my age here, but I think is there still chalkboards out there?
I guess maybe those eraser board things, right?
Yeah,
whatever you call it.
So anyway, I'll say everything works on the chalkboard. And from a theory standpoint, everything works great. And we've all been in policy meetings in government during our careers, Roger and Carolyn. And, you know, I think we always took an extra conscientious, step to say, how does this get out? Are there any unintended consequences here? And I'm personally not seeing the type of policy that, gets put out there. And then in fairness, the contracting officers are required to carry it out. And I think there's a lot of policy that's, you mentioned data, big data and everything. And from a data standpoint, we were always asked to get more data, get more sales data. And it's kind of like, we created the data in government, but we're going to turn to industry to have it report back to us. And then we're going to criticize and hold industry liable if they get that reporting wrong, but it's our data. So we're creating this.
What a great country, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can't make, and literally we're not making it up. So I say you can't make it up or not. So this is part of the balance between, you know, it's almost be careful what you ask for, because you want all this stuff, but you don't want to, you don't think about it. It's a cost element, and industry cannot turn on a dime. It's got its internal systems, no different than the government. If the government's saying, I want to get this data reported back to us because you don't understand how big our systems are, industry in many cases is the same way. And I think that's where I kind of get back to, I think, a widening gap between the policy folks in government and contracting, as well as the operational folks who have to carry it out. And I think we have that Mythbusters been around for a while. You know, government should talk to industry, but I think government needs to really talk to not only industry, but talk internally to the operational folks. So I could go on and on, but I know,
Carolyn,
you know,
thoughts?
Some of you may want to jump in here.
Well, I want to pick up on your communication, because I do think that there needs to be a lot of discussion between different stakeholders, but the policy and the operational connection, I think, is extremely important. But I think that we have seen somewhat of a loosening of communication within the government in terms of the government is communicating more outward. I think OASIS was an example of the government actively going out to give information. I would like to see that trend to continue to a more individualized communication between not only the internal stuff you're talking about, Bill, but at the level where negotiations occur. I think
that's where it's still lacking, I think. A very
critical deficit in the discussion back and forth. And I think it is having a huge impact on operational issues like the timeliness of processing actions. And if that trend on communications can continue, I think that it would help a lot in a number of areas, on the high level areas like you're talking about on policy, but I think also down to the individual contract negotiations that we see every day.
You know, another question, I guess I don't know if you thought about it at all, Bill. You talk about the gap between the policymakers and operational folks. In some agencies, it seems like now there's a gap between the management and the contract operations on the ground. And, you know, to be more specific, you know, in the case of GSA, you know, with the improper management intervention audit, the role of management of what is a acquisition organization, it seems to be in question, or even to a point where folks are pull away from that, from, you know, being a manager or be proactively managing an organization for fear that they're going to be at risk for doing what I would say is their job. But your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I got a lot of thoughts on that one. I think I think government within itself has to trust its own people. Are there going to be a few bad apples in any organization? The answer is yes, whether contracting, outside, whatever. I mean, it's life, it's people. And I think to your point about GSA pretty much issuing a memorandum to supervisors and procurement, like, you know, you cannot enter. If you talk to someone about a question maybe a company has about a negotiation or something, as an example, you cannot intervene. And that's like, well, then what are we doing here? I mean, that's the role of one of the roles of management. And I think the government needs to open itself back up internally, to Carolyn's point, to have that back and forth dialogue internally. I mean, I've always had a problem with the initial Mythbuster memo that was sent out, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, saying, hey, you know, you need to talk to industry. I mean, the fact that you put a memo out to say you got to talk to industry is just kind of a sign of the times. And here we are in a social media world where people are just, you know, flat out texting, tweeting, however you want to cat Facebook, and we can't talk internally. That's there's clearly a disconnect there.
Carolyn?
I'm good. I think about an article that you did before. I think it was so much contact and so little communication with social media.
Yeah.
Right. Well, okay. Well, you know what? We've reached the end of the show. I can't believe it went this fast, guys. So we could come back and do it again and talk about the rest of the year. No, Carolyn's looking at me like, yeah, she wants to shoot me right now.
2015.
About, right. Yeah. Carolyn will be back a year from now. That's right. We'll drag her kicking and screaming to her. So I want to thank my guest today, Carolyn Austin, Executive Vice President and General Counsel, Coalition for Government Procurement, Bill Gormley, President of the Gormley Group and Chairman of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.